I don't know how to respond to this other than I'm so sick of watching, reading about people mine the same things. Cate Blanchett talking about her role, over and over and over again, and it just doesn't stop because that's where the traffic is. That's what is presumed to be, good, good financially for the sites pushing this stuff. So I'm not disparaging it, but I'm just amazed that it just keeps coming. Steve Pond, everybody just keeps hammering on it. There's only some ways to come at this.
You're talking about the
Yeah,
cable streaming.
coverage of everything about the Oscars, all the nominees, just over and over and over again. They keep doing articles about American Hustle. It's like they're sitting in a room saying, "How can we skin this cat another way? We got to keep skinning it."
It's like
And
they're sitting in a room. That's exactly what
yeah.
they're doing. They're trying to, the editors are saying we need Oscar content. Let's come up with some Oscar content. What do you got? What do you got? What do you got? Well, in the past, since they changed the date, which was 2003, something like that, 2002, 2003, right in there. Everything happened so fast because the Oscars were held in February. Well, now we have a little bit of a lag time. I think that's why it feels so dead. Like there's two things that aren't happening. One, we don't have a Zero Dark 30 type of situation, which is consuming everybody's attention. Two, we don't have Ben Affleck on the campaign trail, quote unquote. Because you have to say on the campaign trail because that's exactly what they do during Oscar season, they campaign. We don't have that. We don't have Ben Affleck entertaining everybody, everything is quiet and respectful and calm, and nobody particularly wants to celebrate a movie starring Sandra Bullock. Nobody cares except the internet fanboys. 12 Years a Slave, nobody likes to talk about anything related to race at all ever, and they least like movies about black people. It's just not where the interest lies in our media. It never has been. You know that because if you that's the one of the reasons they don't put black people on the cover of magazines. It's just a majority, they're interested in a different kind of thing. They're interested in the popular celebrities, and the popular celebrities are the white celebrities. Well, we don't have a lot of celebrity in the race, so even Cate Blanchett's not a big celebrity. She's kind of a respectful, star. Steve McConaughey and True Detective, that's about the most exciting thing happening right now, and you can feel the buzz on that. I don't know what happened with Wolf of Wall Street. It was churning along there pretty great, and then all of a sudden it just flatlined. American Hustle, it's just American Hustle is sort of like a big letdown to people. It started out great, and then it just
Now, let's be careful now. You're saying it's a big letdown. And what, how do we mean? Are you talking about yourself, Sasha, or are we talking about
talking about it was a movie of hype, and the hype dissipated pretty quickly. The New York Film Critics gave it Best Picture before it had even been reviewed. Well, then they went and reviewed it, and they gave it great reviews. It won their top awards. And then people start talking about it, like, well, it doesn't have a plot. What's this movie about? And little by little, it just started to become more and more only about Jennifer Lawrence, and then the clothes and the hair and how funny and stylish it was. But that's not a sustainable mood. It's not a sustainable topic for Oscar season. How do you talk about that? Oh yeah, Jennifer Lawrence was so great. Oh, wasn't it funny when they danced the Hustle? Yeah, it was great. It's like, well, okay, so what? What else? And it's just kind of boring to me that this Oscar season, it's couldn't be more boring. I find that there's nothing really to talk about. Even though it's the most wide open Best Picture race we've ever seen, and since they expanded to more than five nominees, we've never seen a year where any movie could win Best Picture, and we're about to go into one right now. So probably it'll be what people expect. It'll be Alfonso Cuarón and 12 Years a Slave for Best Picture, or Gravity for Best Picture. There's a tiny chance American Hustle can get in there, sneak in there because of the actors' support. But
And the Leo thing, as you and I have discussed, is just people like us wishing, hoping that there's no basis in reality, right? You believe?
yeah, I don't know. I don't see the Academy. Look, you want to talk about overdue actors? Look at Peter O'Toole, Harrison Ford, people like that, Robert Redford. They don't care about that. They don't care about rewarding a popular star. They don't look at it like that. They tend to either pick somebody based on it's a good character, like an admirable character, or it's an actor, somebody like Matthew McConaughey, who really has stepped up this year, not just with Mud and with Dallas Buyers Club and Wolf of Wall Street, which he's great in that. he gets the boost from Wolf of Wall Street, you know. Mm-hmm. But True Detective is happening right now during voting, and everybody's talking about it. Everybody's consumed with it. Everybody's dazzled by it, you know. And that helps Matthew McConaughey win, because he couldn't be any hotter right now. I would be shocked if Leo DiCaprio won, just totally, completely shocked. I don't, you know, first of all, I don't think any actor has won one Best Actor without at least a SAG nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about SAG win, but even a nomination, like Adrian Brody, if you look at any of the surprise winners, they at least had the SAG. And yes, it's true that Wolf came out too late, but it's true. So you can't really count that. But nonetheless, however it turns out, not having that SAG nomination puts him behind the actors who do. And so he has to overcome all that.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that people are going to like that movie and like his character enough to beat Chiwetel Ejiofor or Matthew McConaughey or even Bruce Dern at this rate, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, never say never. I think if that phantom buzz was true, he would have won the BAFTA. They obviously didn't like 12 Years a Slave at all. They could have given that award to Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, yeah.
But they didn't even like Wolf of Wall Street enough to give it a best. They liked Philomena more than Wolf of Wall Street.
That's a pretty, that's always struck me as a perfectly respectable, have no huge issues with it, but I really hated what Philomena was saying in the end about how you got to cut people who have done wrong a break. You have to, it's better to be Christian and forgiving of people who have done clearly evil things. I found that a reprehensible viewpoint. But that's what they decided to do because it was a, you know, it felt more, I don't know, what's the term? You know, it felt a little more, just more compassionate. You know, you don't want to end on a note of condemnation. Do you have any feelings about that? Did you see, you know, did you have a feeling about, you know, Philomena and its, and the way she forgives the nun at the end and chastises, you know, Steve Coogan for being, you know, a hater and all that?
Well, I appreciate your point. You know, you've spoken like a true atheist, even though I know you're not an atheist, you're an agnostic. But
yeah.
I think that for me, the movie was that I admired her for her capacity to forgive. Because, you know, carrying around a grudge and hatred in your heart doesn't do you any good. It doesn't do the world any good. It certainly doesn't solve the past. And yeah. To be able to forgive is to release yourself. And it really, if you had seen a character like Philomena carrying around her heart, mm-hmm. that would have been healthy for her. You know, I mean, it's much better for her to look at the church that way. It benefits her. And yes, it is overtly Christian, that message. Of course, that's you know, that's Christianity right there in a nutshell. But it didn't offend me in that way. I felt like Steve Coogan's character more. You know, I felt I could relate to him more, but. At the end of the day, a character like Philomena is a lot more admirable, healthier, you know, just a kind of a better person for being able to do that, for having that kind of a big heart enough to forgive. I certainly would.
Seems to be there's a big gap. I think that you do have to let hate go. You can't kind of, you know, sleeping with it and then waking up the next morning. You know, boy, am I really? I'm still ready to hate those people because it's so awful and everything. I think you really do have. It's just a natural thing to let things go, to move on, to refresh, to, you know, let the old skin drop to the ground, and, you know, just kind of live and breathe in. But there's a big difference between that and not and it seems to me that you can just kind of let the hate go, but you don't have to, like, sort of say I forgive you in so many words. I don't see where that. I don't want to get caught up in an ethical thing on a chit-chat about Oscars and everything, but I just was, that was a I just think that, you know, that scene is a soft, likable film, and I just don't understand what people are talking about when they say that, but I'll let it go.
Well, at the end, I mean, I keep saying at the end of the day, I know people hate that term, but it's true that the BAFTAs picked Philomena over Wolf of Wall Street for Best Picture. That's their entire voting body. They mm-hmm. didn't like, so to me, that told me that there was no way Leo was going to win that award. I mean, there was a tiny bit. I predicted him to win because I was kind of caught up in the hype of it, thinking mm-hmm. maybe he will. But But the, you know, the fact that they, when I thought about it a little more carefully, the fact that they didn't pick Wolf of Wall Street for Best Picture should tell you that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the same with the Academy, but look, they're notoriously, you know, it's not like they've been giving him award after award. He's been nominated, he's never won, and the internet wants him to win, you know,
yeah.
But that doesn't mean that he's going to.
So that's what's missing, basically, here. You know, there was I keep pointing over and over again to the great year of the Oscars as the surprise surge, the surprise win of The Pianist, which people thought perhaps wasn't going to do as well as it could or should because of the haters coming out about Polanski. And when he won Best Director, when Ronald Harwood won the screenplay, when Adrian Brody went for Best Actor, that was just like all the people who seemed to say, this is what's going to happen, and this is what we feel has happened, and this is, you know, and this movie is not going to win. All that stuff just fell apart. It was wonderful when that happened. I haven't felt so good about the Academy in my life, ever.
Yeah, since I was that vlogging night, that you know? Year. I remember, I mean, yeah. I was right covering the whole Oscar race. I remember the lead up to it, and I remember the night that it happened. I remember us all sitting around waiting, thinking, oh my God, it's going to take Best Picture too, because
yeah.
It had taken every award that we thought was going to go to a different movie. But as I recall, number one, people weren't talking a lot about Roman Polanski. That came later because the internet wasn't as kind of activist as it is now. There wasn't social networking. The people didn't spread around, you know, hysteria and get all, you know, trumped up about certain things. It just maybe appeared in one story somewhere in a newspaper. But no one was really talking about Roman Polanski in that way back then. I remember that's number one. Number two, people like me and David Poland, I remember specifically, both of us were advocating hard for The Pianist. The thought at the time was, Chicago's going to win everything, but oh my God, did you see this movie? Did you see The Pianist? And everybody was talking about it. Everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember having an interview with a guy from some magazine, and we were talking about Best Actor, and I said, you know, there's a really good chance that sorry, cut out my coughing if you could. Daniel Day-Lewis and Jack Nicholson are going to split the vote, and Adrian Brody could win. It seemed like such a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew he deserved it. Everybody knew at the time. We were all thinking, oh my God, he's the only reason Jack Nicholson might win because he's a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason Daniel Day-Lewis would win is because he's Daniel Day-Lewis, and he gave that, you know, scenery-chewing performance in Gangs of New York. But Gangs of New York was, as Janet Maslin had said at the time, she said the Academy loved Gangs of New York until they actually sat down and watched it. And they yeah. voted in with 10 nominations, and then she's like, and then they watched it, and then they didn't like it. So
yeah.
The buzz on Gangs of New York was tainted for that, but it was also tainted, I think, because, as I recall, I'm pretty sure it was this movie that Harvey Weinstein took out that Robert Wise ad saying, I think Martin Scorsese should win the Oscar, and he got in a lot of trouble for it. So Gangs of New York became tainted, and so it wasn't going to win anything. And Jack Nicholson, does he really need another Oscar? No. Well, look, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out if you have a movie about a Jew in the Holocaust, a starving Jew like Adrian Brody,
yep.
that's not going to ring. That's not going to resonate with voters. Of course it is, right? These guys of all people are going to go for this, right?
Right.
So some people were actually out on a limb predicting Adrian Brody at the time, but I don't think anybody predicted that Roman Polanski would win director, not in a million years, and that it would win adapted screenplay and that it would win actor. Just could not, maybe actor was the most you could see winning, but nobody thought it was going to win director. But it's worth noting that it did win the BAFTA before it won. That's the only time where the BAFTA has been really, really influential in a very big way.
Okay.
Was that it won, I think it even won picture. I have to check, but I know it won director. So
there's nothing, just to hash over a very tired point, so there's no real surprises at all to be in this entire thing, right? I mean, it's all been sussed to death. Do you see anything surprising? What do you see as a possible, at least a possible, not likely, but possible surprise?
I think there will be surprises. I think that it is, you know, people try to predict them, but you can't predict them, really. If you predict them, you just get lucky. You roll the dice and you get lucky.
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, you look like an idiot because you predict something that is never going to has a chance of taking place. But people who take those kind of chances can sometimes get the big payoff when it happens. But I sort of sense just it could turn out to be not true because, you know, the Oscar race is so predictable lately. But it feels like such a wide open race that I really could see anything happening, especially for Best Picture. I could see them calling American Hustle, which would shock everybody. But I have to say that this, if you're talking about a split vote in the past, as long as the Screen Actors Guild has been in business, they've been going, every time there was a split vote, the SAG Ensemble Award had something to do with it.
Okay.
So every time Shakespeare in Love, Crash, the Chicago, all those movies won the SAG Ensemble, and even Traffic, which ended a huge surprise when Steven Soderbergh won director, that was SAG Ensemble picked Traffic too. So the actors have factored in a split. But this year could also be like 1967, when In the Heat of the Night won Best Picture and The Graduate won Best Director. Because that's when the New York Film Critics gave In the Heat of the Night Best Picture Mike Nichols Best Director. The Golden Globes gave In the Heat of the Night Best Picture Mike Nichols Best Director. And then the Academy, the DGA gave it to Mike Nichols. The Academy went In the Heat of the Night Mike Nichols for director. It was an agreed upon split at the beginning of the season, and it lasted all the way. So that is the only, and In the Heat of the Night is a movie about racism, just like Here's a Slave is. So right. It fits. They love Gravity. But they feel that they need to award this history making movie about racism and race and slavery. So they're going to go with 12 Years a Slave for picture and alpha. That's probably, or it could be Gravity for both. I don't know. I'm only going with the Lemmings because I can't handle the stress of being out on a limb like I was last year and the year before. You know, just being the one person not predicting the right thing. You know?
Yeah, the right thing being that what you're defining right is the one that's accurate as far as predicting what all these people want to vote for. I don't think that's right. That's just
the consensus pick. You know. The Lemmings pick.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
That's how you hide in the Oscar race. If you want to not have anybody notice you, you just do what everybody else is doing. You look around, you do it. If you put yourself out on a limb, people, you know, you're opening yourself up to either be ridiculed. Okay. Oh, you're such a bad predictor. Yeah.
Let's have a conversation just for an exercise with the person whom Michael Musto spoke to very recently for a Daily Beast piece. And he called the person Pat. Call that a guy. And he says, basically, so let's just join the conversation, because I think what Pat said about his various calls were appalling. I mean, it's like people were saying, what is with this guy? And let's go through it here. He says, hello, Pat. So what will, with all this Woody Allen stuff going on, will Kate Blanchett's Oscar chances be damaged anyway? And Pat goes, no. It would not have, actors have nothing to do with that. Okay, that's a sensible thing that Pat said. And then he says, what about Woody's chances? He's up for original screenplay. And Pat says, I didn't vote for his screenplay just because I liked another one better. The alleged scandal wasn't a factor. I thought Her was really original. I, again, applaud Pat. Good smile. I completely agree. I think Her is going to prevail, don't you think, for original screenplay?
I'm predicting American Hustle, but it's for me, it's a very tight toss-up. I think Her deserves it. Obviously, American Hustle is a terrible screenplay, but I think they love that movie enough that they're going to want to give it something.
Now, Pat feels that Allen's screenplay of Blue Jasmine, which I never thought was really that much of a contender, something that had a real shot, was too borrowed from A Streetcar Named Desire, which is absolutely true. So he borrowed and used things, but Her, he maintains, was an original work of art. So that's, again, Pat sounds fine. he says, back when Roman Polanski won for The Pianist, did you feel the same way about not factoring in sexual matters? And he says, yes, I think it would be irrelevant. A movie stands on its own. I'm not crazy about what he, apparently meaning Polanski, did. But on the other hand, you do a movie, and if it's a good movie, it's a good movie. If it isn't, it isn't. And he says, is that the prevailing view among voters? And Pat says, I think some voters are not going to vote for Woody because of that. I know a couple of people who think he's disgusting.
But it didn't matter. He wasn't going to win anyway.
Yeah, he's not going to win anyway. So
it's irrelevant, but anyway.
So they won't hold any of this against Kate, right? He says, I don't think so. She wasn't there at the time. I think that issue was flared for a few hours and it's over. And she did gave that nice quote to me at Santa Barbara. I think it's over. I don't think anybody ever gave it any, right? Do you agree?
I agree.
Okay.
It's over.
And then he says, so best actress, you are going to go for who? He goes, Judi Dench. I think Kate is wonderful, but to me, it was watching an actor's technique at work. Her performance. She's a brilliant technician. She'll probably win, but I felt I was watching her the whole time rather than living with her and the character. Whereas with Judy, I felt I was living with her and this woman.
Yes,
But
translation, I liked her character better. A lot of times Oscar voters vote, they don't vote for the actress and the performance, they vote for the character, and nobody likes gonna like Blue Jet. You know, Jasmine's not a nice, likable character, so you have to vote on her skill as an actress and if you like her as a person, which most people do, but this guy is clearly the type that like vote for the character.
My argument with Blue Jasmine all along is I accept that Woody characterized her in the way she did. She's a very woman caught up in so much denial and so much anxiety and frenzy and too much alcohol and pills and everything else. But a playwright or a screenwriter with any compassion for his characters, and you can't write people like you hate them. You have to sort of get down there with them and feel what they're about and get, sort of take the ride with them. He doesn't give her a moment of honest honest reflection about where she has been. She doesn't have to become a different person or grow or take a step in the other direction and become a better person. But a compassionate thing would be to at least allow her the chance to recognize, look in the mirror and say, this is who I am. And he doesn't even do that. She's not even, she doesn't have that mirror moment in Blue Jasmine, which I thought was disappointing from a dramatic standpoint and disappointing that he didn't, get a little closer. He had a lot of, in other words, he had too much dislike for her
Exactly.
to, so.
That's one of his big problems is his, I'm not going to get into it, but his hatred of Mia, I think, has colored a lot of his latter work. I think he, hostility and anger and bitterness has reflected itself. He
What did you,
writes.
speaking of Mia and Woody and everything, what did you think about Janet Maslin's comments yesterday, that came out yesterday through Gawker, that she says she knows somebody who's pretty close to the situation, that the reason Dylan went to and wanted to have another article and say her piece, which are not commenting upon the validity of it or the truth of it, is that she felt that the Vanity Fair piece did not pay attention, enough attention to her, and it became a kind of a Ronan might be Frank Sinatra's son article rather than her having her moment of what she felt of truth, and she wanted to have
Again,
her recollection.
to me, it's shooting the messenger. I don't really want to talk about it anymore, only because I've reconciled it in my mind. You know, I feel like I validate her, and I believe her. That I don't know about the molestation. I don't talk about that or think about that. But in terms of his inappropriate relationship with her, that's documented and witnessed. That's her experience. She's talking about it. Fine. It doesn't have any effect on what I think of him as a filmmaker. I think he's a great director, and nothing that in his past is going to change that. Period. The end. So yes, I believe her. I validate her. I think he's a great artist. That you have to say, because he did this thing that invalidates all of his work. And it's reconciled in my mind. So I don't really feel like going back and forth over it, running over it. But, and I think that Janet Maslin piece is silly and stupid. And I don't know why people are getting on Nicholas Kristof. Don't talk about killing the messenger. Just let it die. You know, why keep bringing it up? I don't
I
understand.
agree. I should just be left alone. I feel there's the helium has got out of the balloon and just let it go.
And there's nothing more to be found. You're never going to get anyone to admit on either side anything. So you have a personal choice to make, what you believe, what you, and then you move on, you know.
Pat, good to get back to the Musto chat. He says he did vote, however, for Sally Hawkins in Blue Jasmine.
Oh, God, get Pat out of here.
I thought her performance was wonderful. With Sally, I was believing her, living with her, and so on. But I think Lupita Nyong'o will win, is what he says,
Yeah,
which I think he's right.
that's the dangerous thing when voters say that. That's always something you should pay attention to when people say, that was the Argo thing. I really liked Argo. Argo is my favorite movie of the year, but Lincoln will win. You always have to pay attention to what they're saying that they liked and voted for, as opposed to what they think will win. They don't know anything about what's going to win. They only know their own heart, and chances are there's a lot of people who agree with them.
Must
So, and look for Sally Hawkins to maybe upset. Who knows?
If Her wins for original screenplay, Michael says, is it possible that American Hustle will do a sort of Color Purple and go 0 for 10? And Pat says, well, I don't know. I enjoyed it. But looking back, I really don't, I kind of don't remember it all that well, except for the hairdos. To me, it was a hairdo movie.
Okay. Flatlined. The hype was too big when it first came out. You mm-hmm. know, there's no there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just mostly surprised at the New York film critics for going ass over elbow for it. That is probably my biggest shock of this year.
Mm-hmm.
They did, that they liked it as much as they did, I believe.
Here comes one of his real ludicrous thing. So he says, no love for Jennifer Lawrence. And Pat goes, I remember her. To me, she was fine. But my son, he said, he read the real story, and the Bale character's real wife was 15 years older than him, not this hot young girl. God, it would have made so much more sense if she's older and he meets this woman who in real life is really British. It would have made much more sense that he left an older woman for Amy Adams. By the way, Amy,
of course. Yeah. A, it never made any sense that he would have left Jennifer
Lawrence. Jennifer
Lawrence,
exactly. Yeah.
And B, that these two hot women would be chasing around after Christian Bale. And the fact that the real life woman was so neurotic, she ended up killing herself. She was so fucked up. And she was like in her 50s, 50-ish. Yeah. You can see that making sense. A guy who's stuck with a woman, mm-hmm. raising a son, this like unattractive woman in her, you know, close to 50,
right.
then sneaking off with Amy Adams. But they cast this like, you know, right peach in the part. Why would anybody? It just didn't make any sense. But okay, so I agree with Pat there.
And then Pat says, it would have made more sense better. By the way, he says, Amy had no boobs in that dress. A beautiful dress, but she's flat-chested. And then Muster says hilariously, then I guess she can't win. There's also been some brouhaha saying that Scorsese's Wolf of Wall Street promotes bad boy behavior. Would that campaign, that assertion, carry any weight? And here comes, this is what I don't like about Pat. He says, I thought it was a soulless movie. There was nobody to root for. What an idiot. My son's take on it was that it was informational for that guy, for Jordan Belfort, I guess he means. At the end, they promote that he does seminars for people. It's promotional for this sleazebag, a person without a conscience, who stole from poor people and never paid them back. At least with Bernie Madoff, some of the rich got some money back. This is just a complete shutdown about being able to get what that movie was doing, that's, where it was coming from.
The only insightful thing about that is twofold. Number one, he's listening to his son more than he's trusting himself. That means he's really old and out of touch, and mm-hmm. he's not watching all of the movies, and he's trusting his son to tell him about it.
Yeah.
Two, he is a typical of an Academy member. Why do you think they pick the movies that they pick? The Artist, The King's Speech, and Argo for Best Picture the last 3 years. So that is keeping with their attitude. That's exactly what they're like. They only like films that spell it out for you how good humanity is. I mean, it's a miracle that No Country for Old Men and Hurt Locker and The Departed won, when those movies are a little more ambiguous about human nature, although they do skew on the side of right and wrong. Wolf of Wall Street toys with you in that it doesn't tell you. You have mm-hmm. to come in with your own morality intact, you know. What it is visionary directing, and one of the it's the best film of the year by far. But Michael, sorry, my friend's phone is ringing. And he has his headphones on, so he doesn't know it's ringing. Mm-hmm. It's just but I just have to go back really quickly and make a comment about your hideous commenters about Amy Adams and her boobs. Look, any of them would be lucky to get one finger near one of, you know, a piece of toilet paper that she used to blow her nose and discard. They would be lucky to even get close to that use.
You're saying Hollywood Elsewhere commentators have been cruel or disparaging to Amy Adams?
Yes. Haven't you read those comments? And in particular, Lex G calling her Grandma Adams.
Oh, that's right. I saw that. Yeah. Yeah.
Going on and on about how she has her boobs and this and that. They're fucking nuts. I mean, not only does she look incredibly sexy, it isn't really... I thought it was a poor choice by David O. Russell to have her in these cleavage-bearing dresses constantly and, like, slapping her on the counter like she's a piece of meat, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That was unfortunate for her to have to be that woman and wearing those clothes and having her body, paraded around like that. She's always been, you know, like in The Fighter, she's much more filled out, you know? And she has boobs and she has thighs and she has a butt that's different. She wanted to be thin down for American Hustle, because that was the look back then. It was cocaine thin, you know? You were cocaine thin and you were tan. You were like Cheryl Teagues.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, were streamlined and tan with you know, little perky boobs and a low-cut dress. That was the 70s look, and she deliberately did that. So to me, they totally missed the point. That stupid Pat should have his voter's card given to his son.
But does, don't you suspect that, that the Academy is just a, you know, 5,000 Pats in different ways?
Yes. I think you're new Oscar. 5,000 Pats. Yes, that's why it's so frustrating to write about the Oscars every year. That's why it's like it is dwelling with Pats. Mm-hmm. Opinions of Pats, reflecting what Pats think of movies. Yeah. They're the ones defining what is supposedly the highest achievement in cinema of the year. Give me a break.
Musso says, one more hot topic has been the fact that 12 Years a Slave might be too brutal for some of the wussy voters who to even watch, sort of the way they couldn't take Brokeback Mountain. And Pat says, to some degree, it will be a factor because a lot of people call it torture porn. Too much torture in that film. Enough already. We got it. We got it. He's an idiot. In other cases, it won't matter because people realize we need to suffer again the consequences of what was done. I voted for Gravity because I thought it was unique and well done. I don't think the acting was that good. I thought Sandra Bullock was adequate. I wish they had gotten an actor who could have gone deeper. You could have really felt for it. But of all the films, it was the most memorable. So there you go. There's Pat's view, you know. I don't know how to say it. He felt that punished, like a lot of people I've spoken to. They didn't like what 12 Years a Slave made them feel like. They felt it was excessive. They feel that they've completely absorbed and digested what slavery actually was for the people suffering under it. I felt when I saw that film in Telluride, I said, this is the first time I've ever communed with that experience, really. You know,
yes, thank you, Jeff.
It's the only time I ever felt it. So.
Glad and refreshed to hear your opinion on that. Being a white male and saying something like that and being, you know, open-minded enough to get that.
Yeah.
And, you know, really we're talking about two scenes where he's hanging and where Patsy's being whipped. There isn't a lot of, there's more violence in Goodfellas than in 12 Years a Slave.
Right.
The thing is it's not just about slavery. It's not just about making them comfortable. I really hate that Best Picture comes down to titillating and making memorable an experience for a guy like Pat.
Mm-hmm.
That is like, what could be worse? What could be more dumbed down than that?
Mm-hmm.
But 86 years of Oscar history, to me, where the only movie about slavery that's ever won was Gone with the Wind in 1939, and an institution and an industry that for decades, you know, was responsible until black storytellers started coming out and changing it.
Mm-hmm.
The ongoing perpetuating types of maids and butlers and Yasa Nosa and Driving Miss Daisy and all that. I mean, that they are in a way culpable. And, and for this film to win, to me, kind of redefines and you know, is an atonement in a way for their participation in it. That's my opinion, and I also think that it's artistically a beautiful film, visionary. I mean, for me, if it's not going to be 12 Years a Slave, let it be Wolf of Wall Street.
Exactly.
That's a better movie. Don't make it this like watered down crap that is probably going to win.
Right. I completely agree. It's one of the most powerfully made. It wasn't really. It was content, but also technique. It was chops as well as soul and sadness and humanity. It has everything. 12 Years of Slave, but you can't grab people like by the lapels. Say will you wake up and take another look, please. Obviously, they've had months to do that, and they're just not going to budge. If it happens and it wins anyway, I'll be jumping up and down almost as much as I did when Polanski won for Best Director. Probably as much. I mean, it'll be a monumental moment, but I don't know if it's going to happen. I fear the worst. So
do I, and I have been fearing the worst. That's why when I was walking around with Boris, you know, the New York Magazine guy in Santa Barbara, and every time I would come upon an Oscar blogger, Scott Feinberg, Chris Tapley, Ann Thompson, whoever it was, my first conversation would be about 12 Years a Slave, and I would say this was heading into the BAFTAs, because – Chris had put out that article where he talked to some guy, some source in the UK, who was saying people were just throwing their votes at 12 Years a Slave. This is way before the BAFTAs.
Mm-hmm.
And that they were blanket voting for it because it was because it was patriotic. It was Britain. It was a great movie. They were just going to do it, right? So all the pundits thought, wow, 12 Years a Slave is going to really pick up momentum in the BAFTAs. And I was thinking, no way. I asked Chris, who's your source on that story? How does he know what people are doing? Because I didn't believe it for a second. I knew that there was no way that they were going to be... Look, they voted for fucking Argo last year, okay?
Uh-huh.
They're that daring. And they're not that patriotic. And this idea that they only vote for British people is completely false. They're Americanized, you know, as much as any other...
I would say to Chris
and I would say to Scott, and I would say, look, why are you guys so convinced that 12 Years a Slave is the front runner right now when mm-hmm. Gravity won the DGA, it won the half of the PGA.
Mm-hmm.
People love Gravity. It's going to do really well at the BAFTAs. And they're like, this is not going to do well at the BAFTAs because 12 Years a Slave is going to do well at the BAFTAs. And I said, no, it's not. That story was not true. I bet you anything that story turns out not to be true.
Huh.
Chris Tapley story. And then the BAFTAs were held, and 12 Years a Slave wins two awards, right? Gravity wins all the awards, including Best British Film. They deign to give 12 Years a Slave Best Picture because they feel, oh, I guess we have to do it. They don't want to do it. They want to vote for Gravity.
Yeah.
So then out of the BAFTAs, people write these articles, oh, 12 Years a Slave fails at the BAFTAs. 12 Years a Slave fails to, you know, woo those voters. Oh my God, if it didn't win there, it can't win anywhere. So the story post-BAFTAs becomes, even though it was fake set up to be a, you know, to dominate the awards, the story out of it is it failed so badly.
Don't you think that there's something to be said for that? Don't you think that a nationalistic impulse is very strong if it is given a chance to be heard? I mean, you know, McQueen, British, and Choidel, everybody, you know, so it is meaningful, I think, to some degree that it didn't win there, you know.
I agree. I was just upset that they set it up that way to begin with. If I was Chris, I would find out who the hell that guy was and where he got his information, because it was totally wrong.
Mm. Did Chris and Boris speak very much during Santa Barbara? I didn't know that he and Chris actually met or said hello to each other.
I don't think they did, no. This is just me privately talking with Chris.
Okay.
But the thing about 12 Years a Slave is that it kind of got a, you know, when Kyle Buchanan from New York Magazine and Vulture wrote that article way back in September or whatever it was, that 12 Years a Slave was going to win Best Picture, that like put a target on its back because it was somebody predicting it to win just as you're heading into the awards season. Well, the New York film critics took a look at that and said, we're not going to vote for 12 Years a Slave because people think, you know, we like this movie better. We like American Health better, but that's the front runner stigma. You know, once it's a front runner, people feel like, oh, it's not really that good. That's going to win, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's why if you're an Oscar contender out of Telluride, you want your movie to always be kind of under the radar. You want to be like, you know, Ripley picking up the little newt and creeping past the alien.
Yeah.
You just want to creep past the alien so that they're not really noticing you and then sprint for the finish line. That's what an Oscar contender needs to do. And that's what 12 Years a Slave could not do because it was already the front runner heading out. And so what it had to do was be good enough to get people to continue to vote for it while they kept finding fault with it. And the New York film critics really could have, you know, if they had put their weight behind it, if the National Society of Film Critics, if the Los Angeles Film Critics, but they dug their heels in and they weren't going to award 12 Years a Slave Best Picture. And that really hurt it, in my opinion, after covering these awards for all this time. And people will go, oh, well, it's just not that good. Buy that argument, because I've seen the kind of movies that win Best Picture. And I get that they pick movies like Pat will pick a movie that makes him feel good, that's most memorable. And, you know, at the end, when you just kind of have to conclude what it is we do for a living, Jeff, the kind of people that we're paying attention to and meditating on and trying to persuade.
I really don't try to meditate upon them too much for what it's worth on my end. I try to obviously be in the conversation just as much as I can, but I really like to try and commune with the movies and talk about what matters from what I can feel from the films themselves, from the work. And it really is demeaning and kind of almost vaguely disgusting to be talking about the, you know.
Well, the thing that gets me about them year after year is that they, you know, we talk about this when we were talking about Social Network, when we were talking about, you know, why it wasn't going to win, why it had no chance of winning, and mm-hmm. the movie that was going to win instead,
mm-hmm.
Which is like is good, but it's a TV movie, King's Speech, very good movie, but a TV movie, not memorable particularly, right. Is that they don't pick the best. They have the kind of the idea that the Academy, that the best picture of the year is supposed to reflect the highest achievement in film. The mm-hmm. highest achievement. Like, that should mean something. It shouldn't mean, here's the five movies that the awards race has put in front of me. Which one can I stand? Which one has the least amount of baggage? Which is the least offensive of all these movies? Okay, well, that one, because I don't hate it. You know, that's how it is. That's how it seems to go every year. It's not that they're picking something great, because they all can't decide on something great, but what they can all decide on is that this movie has the least amount of people that hate it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, that's Gravity this year.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I fear and I sense actually. Now to go back to Musto one more time. He asked about actor and Pat likes Bruce Stern. He thought he did something different, which is, you know, based on the body work, and he's really different in this. now this takes me to a thought that I heard expressed during one of Tom O'Neill's podcasts. One guy said that every time Matthew McConaughey opens his mouth to say, yeah, this is great that I'm winning, everything's going well, every time he does that, he loses votes because there's something smug about the guy. There's something kind of drawly and kind of twangy and Texan. He's going, yeah, it doesn't work, you know. And I have a feeling that maybe he might not prevail, but I don't think he won't. I just think maybe he might not. That's what
I bought that if it hadn't been for True Detective, which I think has really rescued him. He's so unbelievably good in True Detective.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of wipes away any of that other stuff. I remember when Jennifer Connelly kept winning for A Beautiful Mind, and her speeches were so bad. Like, she would get up there with a crumpled up piece of paper. And
really? So she killed herself, you think?
So, well, no, because she won. And I thought...
Oh, I've forgotten that. I'm sorry.
I thought she's never going to win with those kind of speeches, but it's true about McConaughey.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about him that they don't really like, and if he just stood up there one time and gave a humble speech, mm-hmm. a great humble speech and cried and all that, he'd probably have sealed the deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think his biggest threat right now is Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah, yeah.
He won the BAFTA, and... Mm-hmm. If they want to give 12 Years a Slave something and they don't want to
consolation prize,
they'll give it that award, especially if they give adapted screenplay to Philomena and 12 Years a Slave goes home literally empty-handed with that one award, because there's a good chance Jennifer Lawrence can beat her in supporting Lupita.
You don't think Lupita is a fairly certain thing at this point? No?
I did. Yeah, I do. I mean, I still feel like... But people surprise me, and then they don't surprise me. I pretty much thought at the beginning of this race, when people were reading me and going, oh, you're crazy, Sasha, but I always thought that they were going to kiss off 12 Years a Slave with one award.
Wow.
I thought that one award was going to be Lupita. But after the BAFTAs, I think, well, maybe it'll be Chiwetel and it won't be Lupita, because that's just the way they are. And when you're in the privacy, as Kenneth Turan wrote after Brokeback Mountain lost to Crash, he said, you know, when you're in the privacy of your own home and you're voting,
mm-hmm.
anybody looking over your shoulder, you don't have anybody who's going to know what you do, and it's your chance to get out your frustration.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the commenters on your site, the trolls on your site, that is the same feeling. They're in this kind of dark space where mm-hmm. they aren't saying who they really are, so they have the thrill of being able to say what they really want to say, what they really think.
Mm-hmm.
That's always the danger with Oscar voters, because that's what you're getting. You're getting an anonymous vote.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Someone who gets to do what they want to do, because no one's ever going to know.
Mm, yeah.
There's no accountability.
I think, you know, I've been so impressed all the way by John Ridley's screenplay of 12 Years a Slave, because it's something really quite noteworthy in the way that he captures the way people spoke. There's a certain idiom, a certain rhythm, a certain choice of, there's a certain kind of a very formal way of speech that was prevalent. With Solomon, his character, and they didn't speak, you know, kind of that loose, slangy way that we all associate, you know, with common speech today. It was a different world. I mean, there's the only other film that I know that is really respected that people spoke a certain way was Glory. Glory also did that. Matthew Broderick had a way of speaking that was very 1850s, 1860s formal, as if he was, was taught in a, in a good school, and he had a strict upbringing. I just felt that Ridley's script really captured. It felt like a really good recapturing of what it probably was to listen to people speak back then.
Sure.
Plus,
But also, what you're hearing for the first time really is educated black characters from the era, which there were educated black slaves and educated black characters. That's something people are taken aback by it because all they're really used to hearing is, ah, massa, can I take, the typical slave speak. But to hear, slave characters speak in wow, they were educated slaves.
Right.
It's shocking to people. They're not, they're not used to it, And I think it's a shame that, if you read Matt Solerzeitz or Glenn Kenny on the 12 Years a Slave, when they write about it, and they write about the subtleties in the story, and when people say stuff like, "Oh, it's just about slavery is bad," to me that just reflects their own ignorance and their own inability to kind of see through what they don't identify with. So much of what drives the Oscar race and what drives the Film Awards race is that, you're being able to project yourself into the story, like with her, the success of her, all these like 30-something fanboy bloggers turned critics. They just love her so much because that's them. They can put themselves in that role, in that character. They can't do that with 12 Years a Slave. It's just this kind of, and to a degree, they can't. So a lot of them can't do it with Gravity because it's a woman. But with 12 Years a Slave, it's kind of this black experience that to them, there's just like a wall up. And I've heard a lot of my friends tell me, oh, I really thought that the white characters were really great in 12 Years a Slave, the black characters. Like, to me, that's sort of like, wow, really? Because you're not looking then. You're not really looking. You're just seeing this kind of uniform race of people. You're not looking at the individual stories, which are so great. There's Alfre Woodard's character, who's like the mistress who charmed her way into the top mistress position. There's the whole thing of female sex slavery that hasn't really been explored in many films, where young girls were groomed and raised to become sex slaves of the slave owners. And a lot of people think that the South fought so hard against the freeing of the slaves was because they didn't want to give up all the free sex. They didn't want to give up the sex, that they got from the women that was just ongoing as much as they wanted, any time they wanted, with any age, no restrictions, no regulations on it. And this is the first time that, to me, any film has really addressed that in this way. But that's just my opinion. And to me, there was a white guy who was a slave, that was put in slavery. I'm sure no one ever heard about that. I'm sure a lot of people didn't know that there were free black men who could be captured and put into slavery, All that stuff to me is really fascinating and interesting, and much more so than all but one of the Best Picture nominees, and that's Wolf of Wall Street, which is equally interesting to me.
Now, Pat, by the way, likes Barkhad Abdi, the Captain Phillips pirate. He said he totally believed him, didn't vote, and he thought Jared Leto was good, but a lot of his stuff was external. In other words, he's having lost weight and having the clothes. Well, he didn't think it was that. He thought it was the makeup job that did a great job with him. I would have loved to see a real transgender or gay actor play that part. I can't respect.
So mad. I mean, one thing I can say about the Barkhad Abdi thing is that that's very typical for white voters because Captain Phillips, there's a good guy and a bad guy. Can be Captain Phillips and they can sympathize. But the morality of that film is very, very clear as opposed to 12 Years a Slave or Wolf of Wall Street where it's a little more, there's a little more slippery. Who is who and what is what. But the trans thing, when I was in Santa Barbara and Jared Leto was being celebrated, somebody protested, somebody heckled him.
Because he was playing a transgender person and a real transgender actor should have played it. Wasn't that the point of the protester?
But that means that, you can never really transform who you are. And Sean Penn shouldn't have played Harvey Milk. And Annette Bening shouldn't have played, and Julianne Moore shouldn't have played the gay characters. Well, I think it's that we have a long way to go before gay actors start coming out. And then if you say that, you say, oh, well, then if you're Ellen Page, you can't play a straight character. You're Jodie Foster. You can't play a straight character.
So this is also everything just gets put to the side. I only care what I feel from the screen. I don't really, I want to see Kevin Spacey play more husbands and dads and whatever he wants to play. It's whatever I see in the screen. I shut everything down when I go to a film, and that's all that matters. And people shouldn't ever complain about the
Should
no.
just be if you believe them or not, and I believe Jared Leto 100%. Like, I didn't even think this is a trans character. I just liked the character, who he was, that who he played in the movie, what his part was in the movie, as in he was helping Matthew McConaughey to be more compassionate, and open his heart more.
Well, anyway, so I hope we come out looking okay today, Sasha. We'll know in about 5.5 hours, but
Oh gosh.
I don't see. I don't see any basis for there being anything untoward spoken about yourself or myself. I'm going to be characterized as eccentric and colorful and. And somewhat rash in my writings, but then again, as you said, I think that he sees us as being fairly transparent in our feelings and our advocacies. There isn't a lot of the only thing that he can talk about that could be discussed is the relationship between the content editorially and the advertising. There's always been advertising in all publications from the beginning of publishing back in the 17th century. So I don't know what you can say other than that, there has to be revenue to live, and that's what we work for revenue like anybody else. I don't know what he can what untoward indications are going to be in the piece, but I don't see what anything terribly negative coming from it. So.
I don't either, but you never know, I guess. The thing is your people, like on your site, your readers and various other people, they really do think of Oscar bloggers as bottom feeders, like the worst. Like, I think that they sort of blame the hype around award season on the Oscar bloggers, and I guess that's a fair complaint, I think, but it doesn't mean that the Oscar race is going to go away just because the game has always been there. The game has always been the game. Not a lot has changed. The only thing that's really changed is that the campaigning is done through people and individuals and bloggers as opposed to just the trades, which is what it used to be, just be Hollywood Reporter, Variety, and people like Hedda Hopper, being manipulated around by various studios to spread rumors. And now you've got, Pete Hammond and Steve Feinberg and, to that work at major outlets that can be spun for studios. But the game is still the game. Nothing has changed. I mean, you could really look back on all 86 years of Oscar history, all the way back to the beginning, and not a lot has changed up to and including their taste in movies. It's basically the same as it's always been, with a few exceptions here and there.
All right, that's a nice note to end on. Let's give it a rest. I'll cut this down to 45 minutes. We went 58 minutes, Sasha, but
Nice talking to you, Jeff. Fingers crossed.
Okay, enjoy your Sunday.
All right, you too.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.